We're in 1 Samuel chapter 13. 1 Samuel 13 is one of my favorite passages in Scripture. The Battle of Michmash. We've talked about it before. But I think it's a good reminder. It's an encouraging passage. Because in the passage, there's a stark contrast between two men. You have Saul on the one hand, and you have Jonathan on the other hand. And Saul was inactive. You find him a lot sitting under a pomegranate tree doing nothing, twiddling his thumbs, as we like to say. And Jonathan, he's always out there doing something. Whatever he had, he was using it for the Lord. Sometimes we're faced with these struggles of good intentions. I want to serve the Lord. I want to do something for the Lord, but we don't plan to serve the Lord necessarily, and circumstances get in the way. I'm busy. I wish I could do this, but I'm busy. I've got things going on. Maybe you feel that way with projects sometimes. You say, you know, after I get through this busy week, I can get organized. I'm going to set aside some time to fix whatever that is that's broken. You prioritize it. And we prioritize things based on circumstances, which you've got to take circumstances into account. But sometimes circumstances are used as an excuse to neglect the things we know we should be doing. You say, I know I should be doing it, but the circumstances, I can't do it because I'm busy. I've got something I have to do. You know, after I get past this hindering circumstance, then I can do the things I know I should be doing. Or after I save a certain amount of money, then I'll start tithing to the Lord. Sometimes we allow ourselves to be busy with the circumstances of life so much that we neglect the spiritual and we become spiritually inactive. It's not that we plan to be spiritually inactive. Perhaps we want to be, but we allow other things to be prioritized above that. You know the law of motion, Newton's first law. The idea is a body at rest tends to stay at rest. A body in motion tends to stay in motion. And it's not likely that a candle would just roll to the back of the church on its own. I mean, if I threw it, maybe it would. But it's not just going to get up and go. It's at rest. But similarly, it's not likely that an inactive Christian will become active all of a sudden. It just doesn't happen. Oh, all of a sudden I'm serving the Lord. It's not likely. Saying, you know, one day is not enough and it's not likely. In order to be used by God, though, we need to be active believers, active Christians. And I want to make that illustration from 1 Samuel 13. He gives some background information in verses 1 and 2. It says, Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel, whereof 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. And the rest of the people he sent every man to his tent. So this is early in his reign. Saul was recently made king. It was 2 years. And you can maybe imagine what's going on here in Israel. They had been ruled by judges, and then they came to Samuel and said, make us a king like everybody else. And Samuel, he did. He made them a king because the Lord said to do it. But he said, protest to them. Tell them this is what's going to happen when you have a king. He's going to take of your men. He's going to take of your children. He's going to take of your lands. He's going to take of all your stuff, and you're not going to like it. And so you can see how that's in people's minds, perhaps. Maybe it's even in Saul's mind. You see here, he chooses an army. He says here in verse 2, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel. Is 3,000 men a lot for an army? No, it's not. That's very small, actually. Like, only 3,000 men? There were more people. It says here, whereof 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. And it says, and the rest of the people, he sent every man to his tent. So there were more people that showed up, it seems like, but he sent the rest back. Maybe he's trying to not rule with a rod of iron right now. Maybe he's trying to be, you know, a little moderate so people aren't upset with him. He's the first king, and this is all new to everyone. I don't know. But he only had 3,000 men. And at this time in history, Israel was oppressed. They were oppressed by the Philistines. The Philistines still oppressed Israel at this time. They had huge problems with the Philistines. They were a big thorn in their side. But the Philistines weren't even supposed to be there. They had this huge problem, but the problem wasn't even supposed to be there. The problems that they had with the Philistines, they were a result of previous failures to drive out the nations. And sometimes it seems, you know, easy to let down the guard sometimes or to give in a little, but too often we don't realize the longer or the long-term consequences of failure. You know, you say, I just give a little in this area, or you stop reading your Bible a little bit here or there, and you don't realize the long-term effects that it has. And sometimes we, too, like Israel, experience problems or great problems in our life because of past failure. And they're still dealing with the Philistines here in this passage. Look at verse 3. It says, "And Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba. And the Philistines heard of it, and Saul blew a trumpet throughout all the land, saying, 'Let the Hebrews hear.'" So Saul was in Michmash, as we read in verse 2, and Jonathan was in Gibeah with 1,000 men. And what does Jonathan do? He takes his 1,000 men, and he attacks the garrison at Geba. Jonathan goes out there. He only had 1,000 men, but he used it. He went and used the men that he had, and he smote a garrison of the Philistines. By the way, he was blessed. He was victorious in what he did because he used what he had and he used it for the Lord. And the principle is true that you'll always be blessed if you use what you have for the Lord. Sometimes we worry about what we don't have. Well, you know, I can't sing like so-and-so, or I don't know how to play an instrument, or I can't speak, or I don't know this, or I can't do that. And you worry about what you don't have and not what you do have. When you use what you have for the Lord, the Lord will bless it. You know, these blessings might not be immediate, but the Lord never forgets what we do for him. Even if in the small, even if it's small, the illustration is given in the New Testament of even giving a cup of water in his name. You know, if you give a cup of water in a disciple's name, you'll receive a disciple's reward. If you do something for the Lord in his name, for him, he doesn't forget that. He will not forget that. And there'll be a blessing. Jonathan saw God's blessing because he took what he had and he used it for the Lord, and the Lord blessed it. Again, he only had 1,000 men, not very many. Well, if you can imagine, you know, if you've got a hornet's nest and you take a stick and you just poke it in there, that's kind of what happened here. He poked the bear, or he stirred up the hornet's nest. The Philistines weren't happy that this country, Israel, had attacked them. If you look at verse 3, Saul blew a trumpet. Well, it says, "And the Philistines heard of it." So he attacked, and the word got back to the Philistines, and Saul blew a trumpet throughout Israel. It says, "Let the Hebrews hear. Hey, we've attacked." And in verse 4, "And all Israel heard say that Saul had smitten a garrison of the Philistines." By the way, had Saul smitten a garrison of the Philistines? He was the leader of Israel, but it was actually Jonathan that had done it. And it says here, "And that Israel also was had in abomination with the Philistines. And the people called together after Saul, were called together after Saul to Gilgal." So the battle lines are formed. The Philistines are enraged, as you can understand, you know. So they're upset, and so they're coming. They're coming for you, and Israel knows it. By the way, the enemy, our enemy, what is our enemy? The world, the flesh, the devil. They're not going to like us for doing right either. It was right for Jonathan to attack the Philistines. They were the enemies of the Lord. They were wicked, and God had told them to do that. It was right, but the enemy didn't like it. And our enemy, our flesh, is not going to like us for doing right. The world, the devil. And we should expect opposition. We shouldn't think it strange, as he says in the New Testament. Well, Saul calls for men at Gilgal. And we read about it. Israel heard say this. And they were called after Saul to Gilgal. They needed more men. They only had 3,000 men. In a minute, we're going to read about the army of the Philistines, which was 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen. And it says, people as the sand, don't even count them, and you have 3,000 men. Yeah, we need a bigger army, right? At least that's what Saul thought. And I'm not faulting Saul for this, but it's so easy to have the wrong notion that God could do more with more means. You know, if only we had, God could do so much more here if we had more people. Or God could do so much more here if we had more money. Or God could do so much more here if we had more means. That's wrong. That's not true. Little is much when God is in it. And we're going to see that even in this story. But I'm reminded, you know, of Gideon, right? That was the whole purpose. He had to shrink down the army, 300, I think it was, men, against, boy, a huge army of Midianites. So the Philistines gather together. In verse 5, he says, "And the Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel." Here it is, 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. Wow. So they came up and pitched in Michmash, eastward from Beth Aven. So the Philistines gathered themselves together. By the way, is this army too strong for Israel? The army is way too strong for Israel. Way too strong. As we're going to learn, I don't want to spoil it, but Israel didn't even have formal weapons at the time. They didn't even have formal weapons. And so this army is way too strong for Israel. They couldn't defeat such an army. And by the way, just to put it back on us, our enemy, the world, your own flesh, the devil, is too strong for you. And it's important that we remember that. We're not strong enough to just say, yeah, I'm gonna fight the devil. I can conquer myself. You can't. It's way too strong for you without God. And that's why we have to depend on him. The knowledge of this should help us to remain humble and dependent upon the Lord. And once you think you've made it, you've got to be careful because you're going to fall. Isn't that what it says in Proverbs? Well, as you can imagine, look at verse 6. The Israelites are distressed. He says, "When the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait," for the people were distressed, to put it mildly, "then the people did hide themselves in caves and in thickets and in rocks and in high places and in pits. And some of the Hebrews went over Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling." So there, they came to gather. We're going to have an army, right? And then they saw the Philistines, and then they all left. They started hiding. Caves, thickets. They went even across Jordan, some of them. That's quite a ways away. But yet there were some faithful men that stayed, you know, the strong, faithful bodyguard of Saul, perhaps. Well, what does it say of them? It says they followed him trembling. So they stayed, but they were sore afraid. They were really, really afraid. So they're in a tough situation. Saul doesn't know what to do. And as we're going to see here in just a minute, that Samuel said, "Hey, I'm coming. Wait for me." But the Israelites are distressed. They flee from the Philistines. Can we say that they didn't have peace? Would it be fair to say that? I think, yeah, of course. They don't have peace. How could they have peace when very soon they may very well be killed by the Philistines? Or when very soon their families will be taken or their country overrun? It could happen in a moment. Look at this army. I mean, you can understand that. It doesn't have peace. Their country overrun by the Philistines. This is no easy situation to face. That's true. That's why it's so important that we don't simply look at the circumstances. Because you'll not have peace when you only look at your own circumstances and you look at your strength. That's not the source of peace, looking at the circumstances. You might say, "Boy, I've got all this work to do, and I just can't do it." Or whatever the problem you might have, if you look at the circumstances and your own strength, it's not a recipe for peace. You have to put your eyes on the Lord. Psalm 25:15 says, "Mine eyes are ever toward the Lord, for he shall pluck my feet out of the net." That's what Israel had to do. They should have turned to the Lord. And that's kind of what's happening right here. We'll see it in the next verses here. They're going to have a sacrifice. Look at verse 8. And he, talking about Saul, tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. And Saul said, bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. So Saul disobeys. Saul intrudes into the office of the priest, which he was not supposed to do, which he knew he wasn't supposed to do. Saul was told to wait. The circumstances weren't good. The people were scattered. And Saul decides, well, I'm just going to intrude into the priest's office. By the way, why is he going to offer an offering? Because he wants to please the Lord. He wants the Lord's help. He's entreating the Lord. But he does it a wrong way. He does it in the way that doesn't please the Lord. So you want to please the Lord by not pleasing the Lord. It doesn't work, right? It's never right to do wrong in order to get a chance to do right. He wanted God's blessing by disobeying the Lord. Can we be tempted to do this? Sometimes we could. And perhaps you can think of illustrations. I don't know that anybody's doing this, but maybe you might think, well, I can go and if I win the lottery, I can give a lot of money to the Lord, right? Or other things. We think of, I can serve the Lord, but I'm going to do something that I know is not exactly right, so I can do that. That's wrong. That's what Saul was doing here. Well, we need the Lord's help, so I'm gonna do this, make this offering. And because of that, God's judgment is pronounced in verse 10. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering, the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. And Samuel said, what hast thou done? And Saul says, because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash, therefore said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering. Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord hath commanded thee. So Saul had offered up the offering, and then Samuel arrives right after that. And what does Saul say? He says, Samuel says, what hast thou done? And he says, he starts making excuses. It's the people's fault. See, I saw the people were scattered from me. See, it's their fault. You didn't come at the time appointed. It's your fault. I saw the Philistines. They were coming upon me. It was the Philistines' fault. All of these circumstances came upon me. All of these things, other people and other things. And so he says, I forced myself. Circumstances forced me to do this. By the way, mark it down. The one who's making excuses for his sin hasn't repented. If you're still saying, yeah, but it's not that bad, or you want to make excuses, or you want to try and make it look better than it is, you don't have a repentant heart. And so it's a good indication that, wait a minute, I'm doing wrong. I need to just admit I was wrong. Saul doesn't do that. And the kingdom is taken away from Saul's family. And we can just learn from this, just another instance of it. God always judges sin. We should never think, oh, I can get away with this. You read of people that, it seems like they got away with this thing for so many years, but you never get away with it. And verse 15, we see that an Israelite force is formed. So they get a force, and a force might be a strong word, but some Israelites are gathered together, and the Philistine spoilers, they're going to be sent out. Look at verse 15. He says, and Samuel arose and got him up from Gilgal unto Gibeah of Benjamin. And Saul numbered the people that were present with him, about 600 men. So he had 3,000, and then they gathered Israel together, and then everybody ran away. And so he only ended up with 600 men that followed him trembling, it said. So he gathers these men together. And then it says here, in verse 16, and Saul and Jonathan his son and the people that were present with him abode in Gibeah of Benjamin, but the Philistines encamped in Michmash. And the spoilers came out of the camp of the Philistines in three companies. One company turned unto the way that leadeth to Ophrah, unto the land of Sheol. And another company turned the way to Beth Horon. And another company turned to the way of the border that looketh to the valley of Zeboim, toward the wilderness. If you look at the map, Gibeah's kind of in the south. Michmash is just a little bit north of that. And these spoilers go out in these three different directions, and they're just up in the north here. They're kind of blocking all of the north, so you can't go up in the north section. And as we'll find, Michmash is where the road would go through. It would be a place you would travel. And there's a narrow spot there, and that's why they have a garrison stationed there at Michmash. And so the spoilers went out, and Saul is in Gibeah. That's kind of the capital at the time, Gibeah. And he's with his 600 men. Verse 17 says, and the spoilers came out. And verse 18, it says, and another company turned the way to Beth Horon. We read that. Verse 19, now there was no smith found throughout all the land of Israel. For the Philistines said, lest the Hebrews make them swords or spears. But all the Israelites went down to the Philistines to sharpen every man his share and his coulter and his axe and his mattock. Yet they had a file for the mattocks and for the coulters and for the forks and for the axes and to sharpen the goads. So it came to pass in the day of battle that there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people that were with Saul and Jonathan, but with Saul and with Jonathan, his son, was there found. And the garrison of the Philistines went out to the passage of Michmash. So they go out to that passage, that narrow place, a garrison of the Philistines. So Saul has 600 men trembling, following him. They go to Gibeah, the capital, kind of just, well, we're going to find Saul sitting under a pomegranate tree with his spear. The Philistine spoilers blocked the north, and most of Israel didn't even have formal weapons. So you have 600 men. They're not like they're an elite force. They don't even have weapons. Formal weapons, anyhow. And so sometimes there is no logical way in our minds that we can be delivered. I mean, is there a logical way that 600 men can go and destroy 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand? 600 men, and not just 600 men, 600 men that don't have formal weapons, and 600 men that in themselves are afraid. Like, there's no way that you can conquer this enemy. They only had 600 men. And there's not a humanly logical way that they could defeat this foe. Sometimes we may be in situations like that as well. You know, there's no possible solution. It exists, it seems. And usually it's because, you know, we think it doesn't seem like there is, and usually there is. But these situations are not fun to be in, perhaps, but they're a great opportunity for the Lord to show his power and his strength. 2 Corinthians 12, you remember when the Lord was talking to Paul? Paul was entreating the Lord that he would remove this thorn in the flesh. And he says in verse 9, and he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. And Paul says, most gladly, therefore, would I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. Ah, wow. Wow, what a frame of mind. What a way to think about things. Isn't that the way we should think about it? Israel as well. It's like now is the opportunity for the Lord to show his mighty power. When I am weak, that's when I have my greatest strength, because I'm not going to steal the glory from the Lord. The Lord will get all the glory. This is the optimal time for the Lord to work, because his glory will not be stolen. And sometimes the Lord works this way. As I mentioned before, one example is the story of Gideon. And I'm sure we could find others without much trouble where the Lord makes it very difficult for good to prevail, or at least it seems that way, so that he would get the glory when he gives them victory. Well, look at verse 23. The garrison of the Philistines went out to the passage of Michmash. So there's the garrison. They came and they're in the passage of Michmash. Chapter 14, verse 1 says, "And now it came to pass upon a day that Jonathan, the son of Saul, said to the young man that bare his armor, 'Come and let us go over to the Philistines' garrison that is on the other side.' But he told not his father. And Saul tarried in the uttermost part of Gibeah under a pomegranate tree, which is in Migron, and the people that were with him were about 600 men. And Ahiah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the Lord's priest in Shiloh, wearing an ephod, and the people knew not that Jonathan was gone. And between the passages by which Jonathan sought to go over unto the Philistines' garrison, there was a sharp rock on the one side and a sharp rock on the other side. And the name of the one was Bozez, and the name of the other, Sina. The forefront of the one was situate northward over against Michmash, and the other southward over against Gibeah." So Jonathan, he goes, and he's going to attack the garrison up here at Michmash, he and his armor bearer. By the way, up to this point, Saul had not won any skirmishes. He hadn't won one. Why hadn't he won one? He hadn't seen any victories. Why not? He wasn't even in the battle. If you're not in the battle, you can't have victory, right? Of course not. You'll never be victorious if you're not in the battle. You've maybe heard the story of a runner who once said after losing a race, "If I can't win, I'm not going to run." And somebody else said, "If you don't run, you can't win." And that's so true. You've got to at least go out there and try, right? It's so true. But you will not have spiritual victories if you're not in spiritual battles. If you're not doing anything for the Lord, you're not going to have any treasure laid up in heaven, no victories. You'll not lay up treasure in heaven if you don't get out into the field to labor for the Lord. You have to get in the battle. You must get in the battle if you're going to be victorious. Saul was not victorious because he wasn't even in the battle. Now, Jonathan, on the other hand, Jonathan and his armor bearer, they cross the cliffs there. There's a steep place. There's these two rocks, one pointing south, one pointing north. They're sharp rocks. Bozez, I believe it means surpassing white or glistening, and Sina means thorny. Anyhow, they go up there to the Philistine garrison. By the way, how many men is Saul in charge of? He used to be in charge of 1,000 men. Now he's not in charge of 1,000 men. Who does he have? He has himself, and he has his armor bearer that he's has authority over. So he uses what he has at the time. And look at verse 6. It says, "And Jonathan said to the young man that bare his armor, 'Come, and let us go over unto the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us. For there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few.'" Wow. Wow. Think about that. Let's go. Maybe the Lord will work for us. There's no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few. That's the whole crux of the whole passage here. This truth. In verse 7, "And his armor bearer said unto him, 'Do all that is in thine heart. Turn thee, behold, I am with thee according to thy heart.' Then said Jonathan, 'Behold, we will pass over unto these men, and we will discover ourselves unto them. If they say thus unto us, tarry until we come to you, then we will stand still in our place and will not go up unto them. But if they say thus, come up unto us, then we will go up, for the Lord hath delivered them into our hand. And this shall be a sign unto us.' So that's what they did. Verse 11, both of them discovered themselves under the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, 'Behold, the Hebrews come forth out of the holes where they have hid themselves.' And the men of the garrison answered Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, 'Come up to us and we will show you a thing.'" Let's teach you. We're going to teach you a lesson. "And Jonathan said unto his armor bearer, 'Come up after me, for the Lord hath delivered them into the hand of Israel. Wow. Okay. So Jonathan and his armor bearer, they cross the cliffs. They go and Jonathan puts his trust in the Lord. And we've already looked at some of this, but you'll never be ashamed when you completely trust the Lord. You'll never be ashamed when you completely trust the Lord. Now, sometimes we may misplace our trust thinking that it's in the Lord. Sometimes we think, well, the Lord promised this and he didn't. And then we get discouraged and say, well, the Lord didn't do what he said he was going to do. We need to be careful that we don't ascribe to the Lord something that he said he didn't say he was going to do. But when you properly put your trust in the Lord, you'll never, never be discouraged. You'll never be ashamed. You properly put your trust in the Lord, his character, his design, his nature, his promises. It'll always come to pass. And so what happened? The Lord delivered the garrison into Jonathan's hand. Look at verse 13. And Jonathan climbed up upon his hands and upon his feet, and his armor bearer after him, and they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer slew after him. And that first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor bearer made was about 20 men within, as it were, an half acre of land, which a yoke of oxen might plow. And there was trembling in the host in the field, and among all the people, the garrison and the spoilers, they also trembled, and the earth quaked. So it was a very great trembling. And so they're all afraid. By the way, how did that happen? Jonathan did what he could do, and the Lord did the rest, right? And that's all the Lord asks us to do. Do what you can do. What do you have? Use that for the Lord, and God will do the rest. God will make it prosper. As it says in Psalm 1:4, whatsoever he doeth, he causes to prosper. The Lord causes to prosper to the man that walks with the Lord, puts his trust in the Lord. Well, Saul is going to pursue the fleeing Philistines. We'll read the rest of this here in verse 16. And the watchmen of Saul and Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away. They went on beating down one another. Then said Saul unto the people that were with him, number now and see who's gone from us. So again, he's not ready to go fight. He's saying, hey, who's left us? And we've got to figure some things out here. And so they number. They do that. And when they had numbered, behold, Jonathan and his armor bearer were not there. And Saul said unto Ahiah, bring hither the ark of God. For the ark of God was at that time with the children of Israel. And it came to pass, while Saul talked to the priest, that the noise that was in the host of the Philistines went on and increased. And Saul said unto the priest, withdraw thy hand. And Saul and all the people that were with him assembled themselves, and they came to the battle. And behold, every man's sword was against his fellow. And there was a very great discomfiture. And so you have the picture there. You know, there's a watchman out there and say, the Philistines are running away. And they said, well, number everybody. Saul numbers everyone, and Jonathan, his armor bearer, are gone. And so he doesn't say, well, let's go and pursue. He's saying, well, we need to, let's bring hither the ark. We need to find out if we need to go or not. By the way, oftentimes people who do not trust the Lord or have a hard time trusting the Lord, they're always looking for confirmations. When God already made it clear what they should be doing. But they say, well, Lord, if it's really true, just show me here. Or, you know, I need another passage, or give me another passage. And that is not pleasing to the Lord at all. If you know what's right and God's made that clear, don't just say, well, keep showing me, Lord, is that really right? Is that really right? And kind of pretend like we don't know what's right. Saul should have been pursuing the Philistines, but he's, you know, asking questions again. So they start doing it. They're going to ask the Lord, and then the noise gets louder, and he says, well, hang on, stop, let's go. So it wasn't important after all, apparently. And so that's what happens. They go and they pursue the Philistines. Look at verse 22, or verse 21. Moreover, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines before that time, which went up with them into the camp from the country round about, even they also turned to be with the Israelites that were with Saul and Jonathan. And it says, likewise, all the men of Israel, which had hid themselves in Mount Ephraim, when they heard that the Philistines fled, even they also followed hard after them in the battle. So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed over unto Beth Aven. So God gives them great victory. And it's kind of during this time and after this time, the next part of this passage happens. Look at verse 24. And the men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had adjured the people, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening, that I may be avenged on my enemies. So none of the people tasted any food. And all they of the land came to a wood, and there was honey upon the ground. And when the people were come into the wood, behold, the honey dropped. But no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. But Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. Wherefore he put forth the end of his rod that was in his hand, dipped it in the honey comb, and put it his hand to his mouth. And his eyes were enlightened. Then answered one of the people and said, thy father straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food this day. And the people were faint. And then said Jonathan, my father hath troubled the land. See, I pray you, how mine eyes have been enlightened, because I tasted a little of this honey. So Saul, he makes an oath. He says, cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening. So he makes a vow, an oath. And by the way, vows were completely voluntary. You didn't have to make a vow. But vowels, there's some significance to them. I mean, Numbers 32 says, if a man vow a vow unto the Lord, or swear an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceedeth out of his mouth. Also Deuteronomy 23:21-23. When thou shalt vow a vow unto the Lord thy God, thou shalt not slack to pay it. For the Lord thy God will surely require it of thee. For it would be sin in thee. But if thou shalt forbear to vow, it shall be no sin in thee. That which is gone out of thy lips thou shalt keep and perform, even a freewill offering, according as thou hast vowed unto the Lord thy God, which thou hast promised with thy mouth. So, vowels, oaths. We need to be careful. The Lord is very serious about them. Don't just make foolish oaths or just say something without thinking it through. Ecclesiastes 5:5 says, better it is that thou shouldest not vow than that thou shouldest vow and not pay. This oath that Saul made was not really thought out. It wasn't even necessary. Saul had some issues, as we'll find out, especially with David. David wasn't the source of Saul's issues. Saul had issues way beforehand. I don't believe he really even knew the Lord. He treats the Lord kind of like a lucky charm, kind of like the other nations treated their gods, in a sense. but also, you see here that he's trying to be king, and he's posturing himself, and he tries to act spiritual, it seems. And he makes this vow, and he says, nobody can eat until I be avenged of mine enemies, which is very foolish. The people were distressed. Some pursued the Philistines hard when they heard about the battle. We saw in verse 22. Some ran farther than the rest because they were hidden. Remember, they were hiding in the caves and the thickets, and maybe they had to even run even farther than perhaps some of them. Israel had a great victory of the Philistines. They had a great victory, but now they're distressed. Part of it is Saul's fault. But it's true that sometimes the greatest hardships come after the greatest victories. Isn't that true? Haven't you experienced that? It's common to find valleys, where? Below the mountain peaks. and that happens here and happens in our own life. The people feared the oath of Saul. No one ate anything. And they came to the wood. They came to these woods here. Their honey dropped. Everybody's, can you imagine? They're just kind of standing around looking at it seems. And then, you know, Jonathan walks up and sticks his rod in it, puts it to his mouth. And he eats of it, and he's like, oh, wow, it's great. And then they tell him, we weren't supposed to do that. He didn't know that the oath was made. He was refreshed by the honey. So maybe Maybe he's okay because he didn't know. I think it's important to mention here, sins of ignorance still make you a guilty offender. You know, you say, I didn't know. You're still guilty, even if you didn't know. Numbers talks about that. Numbers 15, 27 to 28. And if any soul sin through ignorance, then he shall bring a she-goat of the first year for a sin offering, and the priest shall make an atonement for the soul that sinneth ignorantly when he sinneth by ignorance before the Lord, to make an atonement for him, and it shall be forgiven him. Psalms 19:2 says, who can understand his errors? Cleanse thou me from secret faults. So he said, my father's troubling the people. I was enlightened by the honey. Boy, we'd have a greater slaughter today if everybody could have eaten. We could have done a lot more. They had fought from Michmash to Ajalon. Look at verse 31. And they smote the Philistines that day from Michmash to Ajalon. And the people were very faint. And that is perhaps about 20 to 30 miles in total that day. Now, it's a lot to walk 20 to 30 miles in a day. But they're not walking 20 to 30 miles in a day. By the way, it's not on a road either. Probably hills and valleys. Well, probably going down in the valley towards the Philistines. But they're fighting as they go, and they're running, and they're chasing, and they're, you know, that's a lot of work. And you don't get to eat. This was not good. They were hungry. So you can understand what they do next. You can kind of understand a little bit why they do what they do. Doesn't excuse it. But so they were avenged of the people, you know, of Saul's enemies. That happened. They continued fighting. They finished doing it. And they told Saul, saying, behold, the people sin. Verse 32. And the people flew upon the spoil and took the sheep and oxen and calves and slew them on the ground. And the people did eat them with the blood. They weren't supposed to do that. Don't eat with the blood. And then they told Saul, saying, behold, the people sin against the Lord and that they eat with the blood. And he said, you have transgressed. Roll a great stone unto me this day. Boy, Saul is not winning many points with the people probably at this point. He hasn't been king long. Verse 34, and Saul said, disperse yourselves among the people and say unto them, bring me hither every man his ox and every man his sheep and slay them here and eat and sin not against the Lord in eating with the blood. And they did that. Verse 35 says, and Saul built an altar unto the Lord. The same was the first altar that he built unto the Lord. That's an interesting side note, isn't it? I think that is. It says it was his first. By the way, he's a man now. How old is he? I don't know. 30, 40? It's interesting that Scripture notes this as Saul's first altar. Is that significant or not? I mean, think about Abraham. Abraham built altars everywhere he went. And other men, you see, they build altars. Because building an altar was a symbol of your communion with the Lord, your fellowship with the Lord. And this is symbolic of Saul's lack of fellowship with the Lord. Saul doesn't seem to have a real relationship with God. In fact, he uses the phrase often, the Lord thy God. That's not what David said. He says, the Lord my God. But Saul says to Samuel, the Lord thy God. You see, Saul lacks something here. And it's very clear in the story to follow with David and pursuing him and all of those things. And Saul has this great idea after he builds this in verse 36. And Saul said, let us go down. And let us go down after the Philistines by night and spoil them until the morning light. And let us not leave a man of them. So it's a great idea, right? Keep them on the run. But he's not thinking about his men. He's not thinking about what's going on here. They're tired. And what do they say? Do whatsoever seemeth good unto thee. It's like, whatever you want to do. You can tell they're not on board. They're not on board, really. They'll do what they're supposed to do, but it doesn't sound like they're really intrigued. He says, and then said the priest, he said, let us draw near hither unto God. And Saul asked counsel of God, shall I go down after the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into the hand of Israel? But he answered him not that day. And Saul said, draw ye near hither, all the chief of the people, and know and see wherein this sin hath been this day. For as the Lord liveth, which saveth Israel, though it be in Jonathan my son, he shall surely die. But there was not a man among them all, among all the people that answered him. So they didn't say anything. Nobody answered. Nobody, you know, they're not on board with what he's doing. They're just kind of sitting there and just listening. And then said he unto all Israel, Be ye on one side, and I and Jonathan, my son, will be on the other side. And the people said unto Saul, Do what seemeth good unto thee. It's like, whatever you want to do. They're just following along, but you can tell they're not really on board here. Which, by the way, you can understand that from the people. But for us, should we be on board with the leadership God's given us? Like, yeah, we should be on board. You know, we shouldn't be just, well, whatever you want to do. Whether it's your boss, whether it's your pastor, your teacher, or whatever it is, get on board, you know, unless they're in sin. Get on board. You say, well, I wouldn't do it that way. Well, it doesn't matter. Get on board, because God has put them in that position of leadership, and support them and help them and encourage them and get on board. It doesn't have to be the way you would do it. But anyhow, so the people there, you know, do what seemeth thee good. And in verse 42, and Saul said, Cast lots between me and Jonathan, my son. And Jonathan was taken. Then Saul said to Jonathan, Tell me what thou hast done. And Jonathan told him and said, I did but taste a little honey with the end of the rod that was in mine hand, and lo, I must die. And Saul answered, God do so and more also, for thou shalt surely die. And the people said unto Saul, Shall Jonathan die who hath wrought this great salvation in Israel? God forbid. As the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he hath wrought with God this day. So the people rescued Jonathan, that he died not. Then Saul went up from following the Philistines, and the Philistines went to their own place. And we'll stop there with reading the passage. So, by the way, when they went and flew upon the spoil, they were responsible for their sin. But Saul was responsible for putting them, the people, in this situation. In a sense, he was a stumbling block to Israel. He caused them to be tempted to do wrong. And that's what they did. They did wrong. And we, too, must be careful that we don't put a stumbling block in front of our brother. 2 Corinthians 6, 3, giving no offense in anything, that the ministry be not blamed. And so he said, you're transgressing. He didn't really take any responsibility. Again, Saul didn't take any responsibility for his actions. And pride will make you do dumb things for vanity's sake, to look like we want to look like. And when it doesn't work out, pride's not going to give in, saying, I was wrong. For after all, that would make me look bad. But God help us to hate pride. So Saul built the altar, and they were going to kill Jonathan. But just because there is a law, or just because someone made a wicked vow, doesn't mean that you should commit the wickedness of the law or the vow in order to honor God by keeping the rule. Jonathan did nothing worthy of death. He did nothing wrong. You think of Jephthah's vow, if you remember in Judges. You know, if you promise the Lord that you're going to kill yourself, well, I made a vow to the Lord, I have to kill myself. No. No, you've already sinned. Don't sin again in making a stupid vow and then in performing it. So the people saved Jonathan from this. So let's draw this down into some more application here. Some conclusions. Saul was generally, he was disobedient. I mean, every time you find him, somebody told him to do something, the Lord or Samuel, he didn't do it. He was disobedient. That was just his mode of operation. And then you have Jonathan, on the other hand. He was obedient, right? He did and went where he was told. Saul didn't trust the Lord. His trust was in a ritual. He didn't truly trust the Lord, but Jonathan put his trust in the Lord. Saul makes excuses for his sin, right? Well, the people and this and that, and I forced myself. He never admits that he was wrong. Jonathan was honest. He, you know, when confronted, he said, yeah, I ate the honey. Saul didn't use what was given him. He had 2,000 men. What did he do with his 2,000 men? He did nothing with his 2,000 men. He even had more than Jonathan had. So you think, well, maybe he could have done more. What did he do when he had 600 men? He did nothing. He did nothing at all. Saul didn't use what was given him. He sat under the pomegranate tree. Look at Jonathan, on the other hand. He used what he had, right? He had 1,000 men. What did he do? He used his 1,000 men. Then he didn't have 1,000 men. What did he have? He had himself and his armor bearer. What did he do? He used what he had, and the Lord blessed it. Saul was inactive. Didn't see any victories. Jonathan stayed active. He was always serving the Lord, always doing the next thing. And you know what happened? God blessed him for that. And the people recognized that. They said, the Lord wrought a great victory. How? Through Jonathan this day. It wasn't Saul. It wasn't the rest of the army. It was through Jonathan. So we can ask ourselves now. You remember, as the Lord told Moses, you know, what is in your hand? What's in your hand? What do you have? What are your possessions? You say, well, I don't have men under me. I can't go fight big battles. You might feel like, well, I don't have a lot of talents, or I don't have a lot of this or that. What do you have? Jonathan remained active with whatever it was he had been given. He trusted in the Lord. He stayed in the fight. He joined in the battle, despite the human odds even. And I think of Moses, Exodus 4:2, and the Lord said unto him, unto Moses, what is in thine hand? And he said, a rod. Yeah, what do you have in your hand? A stick. And God says, I can use a stick. What do you have in your hand? Well, not a whole lot, just this. God can use that, right? If he can use a stick, he can use what you have too, right? And what has God put in your hand? Are you sitting under a pomegranate tree with Saul? You know? Or are you taking the opportunities to serve the Lord with what you have? Are you serving the Lord with what you have? Are you active or are you inactive for the Lord? Because in order to be used by God, we've got to be active Christians. Don't let circumstances get in the way of you serving the Lord. Don't let other things become more important. And so here's just a few lessons from the couple chapters we looked at. Sometimes we experience problems in our life because of past failure. You'll always be blessed if you use what you have for the Lord. The enemy, the world, the flesh, the devil, will not like us for doing right. Our enemy, the world, the flesh, the devil's always too strong for us without God. Little is much when God is in it. Peace comes from looking or trusting in the Lord, not looking at the circumstances. It's never right to do wrong in order to get a chance to do right. The one who makes excuses for his sin hasn't repented. God will always judge sin. And sometimes there's no logical way in our minds that we can be delivered, but God is able to supersede all of that. You'll never be victorious if you're not in the battle. You'll never be ashamed when you completely trust the Lord. And in order to be used by God, we must be active Christians. You must be active for the Lord. We talked about that a little bit Friday with the young folks. Sometimes, you know, if you're going to serve the Lord, you got to make a plan. Because if you don't make a plan, it just doesn't happen. I realize that I'm a person who can't keep things in my head very well. I got to write them down, and I got to make plans. And if I don't, I'm going to forget, or I'm not going to do it right. And so maybe that's you too. Maybe you need to make a plan. Say, this is how I'm going to serve the Lord. This is what I'm going to do this next year. This is how I'm going to talk to so-and-so. I'm going to try and be an encouragement to this person. I'm going to try and work on this person, see if they wouldn't turn to the Lord and put their trust in him. To make a plan to say, hey, I'm going to be an active Christian. I may not have a lot, but God's given these people into my life, and I need to use what I have to these people, or whatever it is. God's given you a talent or an ability to do something, and you use it. Take it and use it for the Lord, like Jonathan did. Lord, we are grateful for your word. Thank you for the encouraging passage and of the Battle of Michmash. What you can do through someone who will simply trust you. There's no restraint to you to save by many or by few. You can do great things through one person. You don't even need the person, Lord. And we know that. But we do want to be used by you. I pray that you would help us to take what you've given us, whatever it may be. And it may change throughout our life. But whatever you give us, help us to use it for you. We pray you would bless it, and you'd bless the rest of today. In Christ's name we ask. Amen.